This is the Cursus Publicus for Wednesday, July 1, 2026. Intelligence from the global frontier. The ground is shifting under North American trade this morning, even as catastrophe deepens in Venezuela. I'm Valeria.
And I'm Marcus. Good to have you with us. And it's not just those two, Valeria. Atrocities are mounting in Sudan, and a maritime standoff is sharpening between Taiwan and China. A wide board today, and most of it lands squarely on customs and trade enforcement.
Here is the bottom line up front. The joint review of the USMCA trade pact, the agreement that binds the United States, Mexico, and Canada, begins today, and it begins strained, with Canada frozen out of the process. In the Western Hemisphere, Venezuela's earthquake death toll has now passed 1,700, with more than 43,000 people reported missing and nearly 2 million in need. The United Nations calls those needs skyrocketing. In Sudan, a major new investigation finds that a paramilitary force committed crimes against humanity and ethnic cleansing in the city of El Fasher. And in the Asia Pacific, Taiwan has told its commercial ships to refuse boarding demands from China's Coast Guard.
And that Taiwan friction sits right on top of one of the busiest shipping choke points on Earth, Valeria, the same waters that feed Trans-Pacific cargo to American ports. So let's get into it. Start us in North America.
We begin in North America, the first joint review of the USMCA. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement formally opens today. The United States and Mexico have already held bilateral rounds, working through automotive rules of origin, steel and aluminum, and what negotiators are calling economic security. But talks with Canada remain frozen amid tariff friction, and the U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Greer, has said he will not recommend renewing the agreement without changes. Analysts point to three flashpoints: rules of origin, labor enforcement, and the so-called sunset structure that governs when and whether the pact expires. Marcus, why does this matter to us?
Because rules of origin determine how much of a product must be made within North America to move duty-free, and renegotiating them means more origin audits and more classification complexity for importers. If the process breaks down, it would strain the very bilateral customs relationships that cross-border commerce depends on. And I'll underline this one, Valeria. It's moving in real time. Every round changes the picture.
Staying in North America, and staying with the cartels. On June 30th, the U.S. Treasury sanctioned a fuel smuggling network tied to the Jalisco New Generation Cartel, known by its Spanish initials, CJNG. Treasury describes fuel smuggling as the cartel's single biggest source of income after drugs. The scheme moves fuel by tanker truck, by rail car, and by what officials call shadow fleets of maritime vessels, ships operating outside normal oversight, using front companies, false invoices, and misclassified customs paperwork to dodge Mexican import taxes. Two Mexican nationals and nine companies were designated.
The significance here is the machinery of it. A cartel running maritime smuggling and trade-based money laundering built on falsified customs documents and shadow fleet ships. That puts a premium on manifest scrutiny, on screening the entities involved, and on close liaison with Mexican customs. I'll flag that this one is still developing. The picture, and the list of designated parties, may still grow.
Now to South America and the Caribbean, where the picture is grim. Deaths from the June 24th twin earthquakes in Venezuela, the first magnitude 7.2, the second magnitude 7.5, have passed 1,700. More than 10,500 people are injured, roughly 43,200 are reported missing, and 1.8 million people are in need, including some 680,000 children. UNICEF has appealed for $52 million, and relief agencies note that response capacity in Venezuela was already degraded before the disaster struck. U.S. disaster response and search and rescue teams are deployed. Marcus, where does this reach us?
It's all downstream, Valeria. This is a catastrophe sitting directly atop the hemisphere's largest displacement crisis. A renewed outflow by sea or by air toward the Caribbean would first build up in transit states, adding pressure on traveler screening operations well before it ever reaches U.S. approaches. And I want to be plain about this. The full toll is still developing, and the numbers may yet climb.
Also in the region, a political milestone in Peru. The country's electoral authority has certified Keiko Fujimori as president-elect after a razor-thin runoff. She won with 50.1%, a margin of fewer than 50,000 votes, over her rival Roberto Sanchez. The U.S. State Department has extended its congratulations. Fujimori ran on an iron-fist security platform amid surging extortion and violent crime, capping a turbulent decade in which Peru has churned through 9 presidents.
And the significance is straightforward. Peru is a major source and transit country for cocaine, and leadership turnover there will most likely deepen the counter-narcotics cooperation and cargo targeting that partners abroad rely on, given Fujimori's security-forward posture. The thing that would cut against that reed is any post-runoff instability that disrupts the handover. That's the variable I'd keep an eye on.
Meanwhile, in Europe, a cautionary tale about border technology at scale. The Schengen Entry-Exit System, a biometric program that captures fingerprints and facial images from non-EU travelers, replacing the old passport stamp, has been fully operational since April. And it is now producing waits of up to 5 hours at peak times. The airline industry, including the trade groups IATA and ACI Europe, along with individual carriers, is pressing the European Commission to let member states suspend the system during the July and August travel surge. Marcus, what do we take from this one?
It's a real-world stress test of biometric entry and exit at massive scale, and that makes it instructive for similar biometric exit efforts and for how partner systems talk to one another. My expectation is that the EU pushes through the initial congestion rather than rolling the system back, with transatlantic traffic rerouting through the busier hubs in the meantime. A decision to pause or phase the system out would be the countersignal to watch.
Now to Africa and the Middle East. A major new report from Amnesty International concludes that the Rapid Support Forces, the paramilitary group known as the RSF, committed crimes against humanity and ethnic cleansing during the siege of El Fasher in Sudan's North Darfur region, with acts the report says may be relevant to genocide. The UN Human Rights Council is holding an urgent meeting, and earlier UN fact-finding had already cited a genocidal campaign against non-Arab communities.
The atrocities in Darfur are accelerating one of the world's largest displacement crises, and that displacement feeds migration and smuggling networks that increasingly stretch all the way to the Western Hemisphere. I'd frame this as a downstream traveler screening exposure to watch over time, Valeria, rather than a near-term threat to forward operations.
We turn finally to the Asia-Pacific. Taiwan has instructed its commercial vessels to ignore boarding and inspection requests from China's Coast Guard off the island's east coast, and Taipei says its own Coast Guard will intervene if needed. It is a firmer stance, and it comes after Beijing deployed Coast Guard ships for what it called a special maritime traffic law enforcement operation. Marcus, how worried should we be?
The significance is the location. This is rising friction at one of the most critical shipping choke points in the world. An actual boarding incident or a blockade would compress the Trans-Pacific container pipeline that is screened abroad, and it would become a fast-moving variable for manifest and inspection planning. It's rhetoric and posture for now, but the geography is what makes it consequential.
And one more today, out of Hong Kong, a significant seizure. Authorities recovered roughly 361 kilograms of cocaine, worth about 270 million Hong Kong dollars, in a raid on a yacht in the Aberdeen Typhoon Shelter. Investigators believe it was part of a single trafficking syndicate's batch, and they arrested the vessel's registered owner. It is the second Hong Kong yacht raid of its kind in a matter of days.
I'd hold this one a little lightly, Valeria. It's so far a single source report, so treat the details as provisional until they're corroborated. That said, if it holds up, a second yacht raid in a matter of days points to a maritime channel worth watching. So before we go, let me put down some markers, Valeria. Here's what we're watching in the days ahead. On trade, my expectation is that Canada will not have rejoined the USMCA talks as a full three-way party by July 27th, and that any movement on rules of origin will point toward tighter content thresholds, not looser ones. On Venezuela, Expect the casualty and missing figures from the June 24th earthquake to be revised further upward, with early cross-border displacement indicators likely to appear by the end of July. And on the Taiwan Strait, my working assessment is that no actual boarding of or armed standoff with a commercial vessel will occur by the end of July, that the gray zone pressure stays below the threshold of open conflict. We'll track each of these and tell you when they resolve.
Marcus, thank you. And that is today's brief. For the full edition, every source behind these stories, and the searchable archive, go to archive.cursuspublic.us.
The Cursus Publicus is personal, unofficial, and open source.
Statim et ubique, swiftly and everywhere. We'll see you tomorrow.